This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Hi, this is Delphine Blue inviting you to join me every Tuesday night here on WBAI at 99.5 FM for Shocking Blue from 9 until 11 p.m. That's every Tuesday night right here on member-supported WBAI New York at 99.5 FM.
Why, thank you, Ms. Blue. It's coming your way tomorrow at 9 p.m. here on WBAI New York. It's midnight as we start a brand new day, January 5th, 2010. Have to get used to saying that and writing it. Well, what an overnight lineup for you. Our midnight program will come to you on recording. It's the best of Night Shift. And we have for the first 70 minutes or so this evening, we're going to bring you a CD marked Christmas Program 2003. And it's not, you know, so long after the Christmas season that we can't hear a Christmas episode, is it? And then for the remainder of the 2 hours of Night Shift, we will find another highlight from a big bushel basket full of highlights of Night Shift programs. Then we have jazz at 2 o'clock. Let's see. Greg Thomas, Keep Swinging. That's this evening's 2 o'clock program. And at 4 a.m., Mass Backwards will welcome in the new year, if we can stay awake. But right now, we present this encore edition of Night Shift here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the World Wide Web.
Midnight. Something happened.
Just feel
Monday night.
Feel us.
Lottie Night Shift.
At midnight.
Fresh eating killer sheep in this town. Living
on Monday.
But see now, sheep was all too going to crash.
But from here,
expert Dr. Niles
responds.
The
baby.
Pounced on a baby goose and punched it.
The name of the show. The feeling that you'll have.
Run to your radio. Listen to Night Shift.
Mondays, midnight, here on listener-sponsored radio. WBAI. Mondays,
you've got to listen to Night Shift.
Here. Mondays, WBAI.
9.5.
With that transmission, I want to go to bed. I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
This is my church. This is where I heal my hurts. This is my church. This is where I heal my hurts. It's in natural grace, or watching young lives shape. It's in minor keys, solutions and remedies. Enemies becoming friends when bitterness ends.
All right, this one. Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia. Valley Forge, Berkshire, Sequoia.
This is Comm Central. Channel open for executive order AUC-3423.
Listen to this, boys.
And you don't think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh? And you don't think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh? And you don't think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh? You don't think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Hi, I'm Billy D. Williams for WBAI Listener Sponsored Radio. You're listening to Night Shift, where life is like science fiction.
fascinating.
Night shift again. I'll be damn late. Night shift again. Night shift again. Night shift again.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Halfway around the world.
Yeah, I'm getting pretty sick of you.
Yes, but you love me. Night shift again. I'll be damn late. Night shift again.
How does it feel?
seems like times have changed.
is that I could probably play this album like the whole evening and just be fine with it, you know.
Yeah, well, it just harkens back to the day of,
yes, it
of
does.
Youth,
yes, it
and
does.
Simpler things.
Yes, youth and simpler things. The simpler time, a simpler place, a simpler world, a simpler country. But you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift.
It is?
It is.
Okay.
And what are we, about 2 days away from Christmas?
See,
so this is really the morning of the 23rd.
Yes, correct? It is.
Tomorrow's Christmas Eve.
Yes. Santa Claus will be...
Now, you have to let go of Monday now. Let go, Joe. Let go.
Let go of Monday, Joe.
Yes.
Can you let go of Monday?
I can let go of many of the days of this past year.
I hear you. Just pick a day. You let it go. Do you think he had a bad year? As I'm reading how Ben Affleck had a really bad year. You know?
Ben Affleck.
Anyway, it's just amazing that that is actually in the papers and people write about it. But this is what I do want to say about Christmas. Okay, because I was raised Christian. Were you raised as a Christian?
Yes.
Joe?
Not a Bible pounder, but...
No, but you were a Christian.
Yes.
Did you ever get thrown to the lions or anything?
No, but there are a few priests who wanted to throw me to the lions because I was a bad boy.
You were a bad Christian.
So...
Joe Masuri.
No, but I was an altar
bad
boy, too.
Bad Christian.
No, I was an altar boy, too.
You were a bad altar boy?
Yeah, well, you know, like, in between masses, playing, like, hoops with plastic-made balls while the pastor's out there trying to, like, you know, say his prayers, and he sees, like, this thing coming up behind the crucifix, like, beep, 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 and, like...
You played ball during the sermon?
No. It was in between masses. So, and I was just like, you know, hey, Francis, let's, like, you know, goof off for a little bit, and... Little did we know that His Holy Highness was out there.
I understand. So you were just not a bad Christian, but a misbehaving boy.
Yes. I was like the Joe Namath of Christendom.
But then you went on to you studied theology? You were what was it you were planning to do with your life?
Me? Well, I went to college prep, Catholic old boy school.
You went to a Catholic college prep, Catholic old boy school? Okay.
Yes.
And were you... considering a career in the theological
discipline? Yes, I was considering it. I went for the interview, psychological, the whole thing.
You did? You went for the interview? What did they determine?
You should go to college because we don't feel you're ready to become a priest at this point.
Mm. Well, I think priests should go to college. You know, I'd be an advocate of that. So that was it, and then you just went to art.
It was
school.
All downhill from there.
Downhill from there.
Yes.
See, but you still wear, you know, closed collar shirts.
No,
that throwback.
It was
thing.
Cold today, yeah, so it was cold, you know. Today.
Well, I do have fond memories of Christmas, and at different times in my life, I have different memories of what, you know, mm-hmm. for a period in my life, this was what Christmas meant to me. So, I am going to ask, and that will be the night shift question of the evening, along with all the other...
What does Christmas mean to you?
What are your best Christmas memories, Joe? I'd like to know some of yours.
What things
did you used to look forward? Well, you know, you have time to think.
I do.
There will be
we
music
have two
breaks.
Hours.
We have two... Well, we have about
well,
an
90,
hour and...
90 minutes.
37 minutes or 34
okay.
minutes, something like that. But, so, over 90 minutes.
I'll think.
You'll think?
I will.
And you'll remember something.
What happened there?
Does this make you think of Christmas, Joe?
I have no idea what this is. Is this sci-fi Christmas music?
This is sci-fi Christmas. It's Christmas on Jupiter. You're in your private ship, heading into the space station. It's Christmas morning.
Duck Dodgers! And the 21st and a half percent century.
All right, but Christmas in space, Joe.
Santa Claus conquers the Martian.
Okay.
Well, that was abrupt.
That was abrupt. But so you none jumped to mind for you?
No, there are a couple. I mean, every Christmas Eve was a big celebration. Up at my grandmother's house where all the aunts and great aunts and cousins would start cooking in the wee hours of the morning.
Okay.
And my grandmother had a nice big finished basement with a bar in it and everything. And
his grandma. part. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I think
and
that.
No. And so grandma was, she was like, I mean, the cook of the family, of the clan.
All of them were in there, were like, you know, cooking and grooving. And, you know, you had like at least one fish done five different ways.
Okay. Okay. Well, what was a fish of the Missouri clan?
Well, we had,
or depended each year.
No, it was usually, it was like you had your fried clams, your fried shrimp, your fried scallops, you had your shrimp scampi, you had your calamari, linguine, and white clam sauce, you had...
So you're Italian?
Yes.
I understand.
What the heck is that?
I don't know. What's the phone number here, Joe?
212-209-2900.
212-209-2900.
In the land of the night shift.
So, what are, though, your, do you have any fond memories of
no,
just,
that was, that
like,
was,
okay, that was,
I remember when my uncle shoved me into the Christmas tree.
Okay.
He was a drunken fool, and
oh, stop.
He said, come here, here's your present. And into the Christmas tree.
Threw into the, that yes. Was, what kind of a present was that?
I have no idea. He said, you want fur? Here's a tree. So, unbelievable. I remember one year, it was after church and on Christmas Eve, and, you know, my father used to like to go driving around the neighborhood checking out the Christmas lights, the different houses and stuff. And it was snowing lightly. There was a light dusting of snow on the ground and in the cars and stuff. And some guy decided that he was going to dress up like Santa Claus and was running around the streets in the neighborhood. So all of a sudden, like out of nowhere, boom, here would come Santa running across the street, ducking into this alleyway, and it was like gone again kind of thing. And then you drive another street, boom, there goes Santa Claus.
Okay,
running
okay.
Through the streets. So,
were they chasing Santa? What was
no,
going on?
No, he wasn't. It was just like some guy decided that he was going to, like, you know, give the kids a treat. And, like, you know, if you were looking out your window and you saw Santa dashing around, kind of.
Stop.
Yeah.
All right, I hear so, you. Okay.
You know. Oh, give me a break. You got to give me the. You got to let me bar this for the people I work with tomorrow.
Did you learn this song in school?
No, I did. I went to public school for a few years, but like, you know, like the easy listening dreidel song. Is this like after the Manischewitz?
Hey. After the Manischewitz.
Pass the joint over here. Give me the Manischewitz. And let's just groove in for the holidays. Yeah.
Christmas sponsored radio. WBAI. The name of the show.
Night Shift.
Yes.
A hot beverage, a frosty night, and Night Shift on the radio with Mike and Joe.
A hot beverage, a frosty night. What's the phone number?
And the cool sounds of Night Shift on WBAI
99.5 FM. We got to say it in sync and then smile. Yes, sir.
You know how to make Manischewitz wine?
No, but I'd love to learn.
Squeeze his testicles.
Oh, stop. Hello, you're in the air.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing?
How you doing?
What did that guy say? I can't believe he just said that. What's wrong with that character?
That's just it. He's a character.
Oh, man. He sounded like Joe over there for a second.
No, it wasn't me. I let other people go where...
You know, it's the Roman blood in him that's, you know, giving way to Joe's homosexuality there.
Roman blood.
So anyway,
Joe,
Mike, how you doing?
The Roman blood in your...
How you doing, Mikey?
I'm all right. Who is this?
My name is Jay Rock.
Jay
with
Rock.
With a Q at the end. For cute.
I understand.
Now listen.
You're a rock star like on the Flintstones.
I used to be.
I understand. I was there. All right.
Listen.
So, yes, I'm listening.
Okay. I want to know. I mean, this is what I don't understand.
Well, a lot,
why
obviously.
Is it that I can tell Mike that you're into the 80s, right?
Into the 80s?
Yeah.
Come
you gotta,
on.
You
got to
see his
go.
Hair.
Into I know you're 80s. Into the 80s. You're into Robotech.
No, I'm
you're
not
into all this
you
stuff.
Asked me about Robotech before. No, I am not into Robotech.
Yes, you are. You told me that last week.
No, sir. Sir, you are
yes?
mistaken. You're mistaken.
Can you lower the music volume, please?
Maybe.
Thanks, man.
Is that better?
You told me last week you were into Robotech.
No, I did not.
Oh,
rewind
my God.
Rewind your tape. Listen, sir. Rewind your tape.
I swear to God you said to me, man.
Sir, I remember your phone call.
Yeah.
Yes.
He doesn't remember
much,
but he remembers that phone.
I remember
call.
Your phone
I remember
call.
You said, yeah, I'm into Robotech.
No, I didn't say I'm into Robotech.
Do you know what Robotech
I
is?
I said I'm completely aware of Robotech.
Oh, okay.
Completely aware.
Okay, but you're not into the 80s or anything like that?
I'm into Voltron.
I think you're into...
I
think you're into big robots.
Didn't you say you were managing a female wrestler
big,
named Voltron?
Lasers.
There you go.
Yeah, Joe.
All right. Hello, you on the air. Who is this?
Hello.
Is this Dr. Discipline?
Yeah.
Hey, Merry Christmas. Long time no hear.
Oh, Mazel Tov.
So, well, and yeah.
Did
yeah.
you like the dreidel song?
It was okay.
Okay.
I like Adam Sandler's better.
Adam Sandler's.
You know the Hanukkah song?
Yeah.
No,
you have a limited scope
of
pop culture.
I'm only...
You can only be in some places.
I'm
many places.
Only... I am aware of... His Hanukkah song, but have not heard it. Have not had the pleasure of hearing it.
You live a
shot. Adam Sandler's Hanukkah song. I know it was a Grammy nominated comedy thing, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was. I'm aware.
Gave rise to that animated
just
feature,
like
Eight Crazy
like,
Nights.
There it is. That bombed. Did it bomb? It bombed horribly. Why? Did you see it?
Because you know, no matter how you want, there are more. You know, it was like. If you make a bad Christmas movie, more people will go out and see it than they will if you make a bad Hanukkah movie. In fact, the Jewish people on Christmas Day were like, we're going to go see a Hanukkah movie. What's this? I don't know. Where's the Christmas movie? We don't celebrate, but we go see the Christmas movie. Last year was the Grinch that stole Christmas. What's this Eight Crazy Night thing? I don't know. I'm not buying a ticket for that.
Is this what your friends told you?
This is what they told me. All those people I know live in Forest Hills. A big shout out to you. Oy vey.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Good evening, fellas. How are you?
The comments of Joe Masseri do not necessarily represent
the editorial opinion of this radio station.
Editorial opinion of this radio station
yeah, thank
or
God.
The host.
Because guineas like him should be shut.
See what your insight? See
now,
what your insight? That,
my thing, the thing is, this
the thing is
thing.
We don't have an intelligent guest here, so...
You got that right. The only intelligent guest there is Mike.
Mm-mm. I'm a guest on my own show.
Hey, Mike. Mikey.
What?
We love you, man.
Thank you.
And another thing.
What?
Put Joe in his place.
Put Joe?
Yeah?
Get in your place.
Yeah, stay there.
Joe.
You're
getting locked. You got the two-step
from there. Look, I got the cage and I got the lock, and next time I'm throwing away the key.
So anyway, who's eating that?
What?
Who's eating that? What's that, potato chips?
That's Joe.
Joe, stop that.
Stop that, Joe.
You guinea wop. Now listen.
Joe.
Now listen to me,
you get this guy. You wound him up, and now he's unwinding here.
You know, I think it was that dreidel song.
I don't think so.
I think it was.
I think it was you.
No, it wasn't me.
Hello, you on the air.
Hello?
Hello, you on the air.
Hello, yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Hello.
Why
hello,
did you say bad things about...
Hello, who is this?
Michael.
Oh, my God.
Joey.
Jeff.
Joe, I love that Jewish. I'm Jewish. That was not insulting at all.
Thank
okay?
you.
That was fun. Okay?
Thank you.
On Friday,
it gets the Jeffrey stamp of approval.
Michael, on Friday,
Jeffrey,
on Earl Caldwell's show, there was a real piece of Jew hate from a caller, okay? I want you to know that.
So why are you bringing it up
no,
here?
No, because I'm saying that would be.
Why
example.
Do we have to invoke its energy
say,
here?
I'm not going to bring it up, Mike. I'm saying I'm not going to say what it was, but if you want to reference it, that was offensive Jew hate. Mike, show is total within bounds of total fun.
Thank you. Okay. I had an adopted Jewish grandmother and
Joe,
grandfather.
Within and this bounds, guy, and this guy, that
Joe Masseri, within bounds of total fun.
Yes, that's
Joe Masseri.
Boundaries of fun.
Joe Masseri.
I'm within the boundaries
within
of
boundaries, boundaries of total fun. Oh, he's a total.
Total fun.
Total fun.
So. Yes, Michael.
What did you say? The you said regularly, very from on high. Yes, Joseph.
Yes, Michael.
Up here in the clouds, we make decisions for the mortals.
In Olympus.
In Olympus.
Offend thee, and I will smite thee.
Do you have any favorite Christmas movies when you were young?
Christmas Story.
Christmas Story?
Great movie.
Which one? The one with Darren McGavin?
McGavin, and yeah.
And you see, I own that, and I have never seen it. Is well, it really that
you
good?
You got to crack it open sometime.
Is it really
there.
That good? Is it really that good?
The original Bishop's Wife.
The Bishop's Wife. I've never seen it. Is that the one that the Denzel was loosely remade?
The one that, like, they should take it out and burn, and no wonder why Whitney Houston started doing drugs heavily.
Stop. No wonder why.
Wasn't it right after that she really started pounding the
you know,
medication?
I don't know. I'm not going to fuel your theory. Hello, you're in the air.
Shooting up.
No, stop. No, stop. Why do you
want to
pitch it?
No, I want to. I'd really like to hear the larger essay from which is excerpted a great film.
Mm.
Laugh, cry, and applaud.
Mm. There is a critical piece.
But Cahiers du cinéma.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, we're getting into that time of year, aren't we?
Yes. Yes. Listen. Have you seen the big fish ads?
The big fish ads.
Big fish ads on TV.
Oh yes. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't know it. Somebody told me yes today. The big fish ads, and then I found out on Friday the Mona Lisa smile ads too on TV.
So is it just?
I've been live one for the year. What?
One cancels the other out.
Oh, Big Fish was. Did you love Big Fish?
No, I know, but
Big Fish was great. So shut up.
Putting your name on Mona Lisa smiles, you know. Next thing you'll be on TV selling dental whitening cream, you know.
You know, just because I like something you don't like, what does that mean? That doesn't
cream.
Mean anything.
Were you having a bad time with that Amber at that point? Did Amber go to
you
say,
know,
no, I like the film.
Stupid,
Michael, you never like anything. Like, no, I'll give them
man.
Quotes.
Stupid
look,
man.
I gave them quotes. See, look,
stupid.
My name is... Please, you, look, save my relationship.
Beat him.
Walking in this wonderland of people, I'm seeing all the things that money and nothing can bring. And you say to me that ain't nobody looking or trying to find change. They talking again, that only word politics play. Hey, but you and me, we can decide it's all in the sea and clear the air, so everybody can breathe. Drop something there, now take a look down. That be you gotta ask yourself, who do you love? And then you pick it up, pick it up. You gotta ask yourself, who do you love? And then you pick it up, pick it up.
Can I have a hemorrhoid cream back now, please?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Joe?
Yes. What's the number here?
Mm-hmm.
212-209-2900. You know, a lot of people are out there, because what time do the stores close tonight?
They're still open.
You know, they're out there raking in the bucks.
They're still open now. Hurry. Mm-hmm. Hurry so, down. They're still open now.
The brothels of commerce.
You know, but I did have a thought, Joe.
Was it a fleeting thought, or was it like
gas? I have some life is like science fiction, but I did have a thought. And that is, do you know who gets whatever they want for Christmas?
George Bush?
No.
Good morning, guys. I want to wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and you're all a bunch of cocklouts. Thank you.
Well, there
you know, he hasn't been on for weeks. Was he on last week?
But he was, you know, obviously compelled by the Christmas spirit.
He's the ghost of Christmas past. Mm-hmm. You were saying...
I was saying my thought.
Yes, what is your thought?
You know who gets...
Who gets the most presents?
Mrs. Santa Claus. She's set. She's hooked up. She can get anything she wants for Christmas. She's, you know what I'm saying? She's got the hookup.
Well, you
don't
know.
Do you agree or do you disagree?
You know, if Mrs. Claus is out there and she wants a call and... And let us know if we should believe the hype or not.
That's just my thought.
Cock mouth.
All right. Well, how did you conjure him up, Joe?
I have no idea. Mm. He's got his own codes.
Well, I have a few things that I want to play to you. And I have a few articles I want to read to you.
Mm. You know.
And do you want to invite a good Christmas memory, Joe?
You know, but before we go on, if you're looking for that present to end all presents, there's this Christmas coach bed.
Yo, good morning, guys.
Mm.
Hey, Mike.
Yes.
Cock mouth.
Mm. Go ahead, Joe.
I like the way there's a catalog called Posh Tots.
Okay.
And they have all this, like, you know.
Now describe this coach.
Well, this coach is an actual, it's Cinderella's pumpkin coach, but it's a bed.
And it's carved out of wood.
It's wood.
Giant pumpkin coach shaped
bed.
That's pretty amazing.
For to decorate the child. Now, how much would you pay for something like that?
What are the dimensions?
The dimensions of this bed are, five feet 6 inches wide. 8 feet tall.
8 feet tall.
Yes.
Five and a half inches wide. 5.5 feet wide.
It's 5.6 wide. 8 high and 9.6, was it long? From end to end. I don't know. So.
Hello?
Yes?
Hello, this is Mrs. Claus.
Yeah, are you hooked up, lady?
Let me tell you something.
What?
Let me tell you something. Please. About anything I want for Christmas.
Yes?
Let me tell you something. Around the North Pole, the big O has not been seen for years and years.
Oh, I see. You mean when Santa Claus says, I'm going to take you around the world, he's talking to his sled?
No, it's more like ho, 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 ho.
Oh, it sounds like ho, ho, hum to me.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I've been patient.
Why don't you have Santa get some Viagra?
Well, I was hoping these icicles were going to work, but unfortunately...
Oh, stop now, stop. Stop now. Mrs. Claus, we're sorry to hear this, but
well,
we cannot permit this type. This is a family show.
I will be listening.
Thank you.
Bye.
Well, there you have it.
Mrs. Claus is being naughty.
The rumor denied. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Rudolph. I got something from Mrs. Claus, and it glows and it doesn't come with batteries. Ho, 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 cock mouth.
Boy, this guy's got a lot of energy.
You know, I'm glad I'm not air-checking the show tonight.
Aren't you glad?
Because it's definitely not one of my more memorable Christmas memories. Mm. You know what I should be doing right about now? Okay. I should be doing what I was doing last year when I called into the show.
Which was?
Making cookies.
Were you?
Yeah,
that's right. You called in. You were making cookies at home.
Yes.
Is this, who is this?
Hello, this is Al.
Al, how you doing, Al?
New Jersey. How are you?
How is Jersey?
Jersey's doing well. It's cold.
Now, do you have any fond memories of the holiday times, Christmas time?
Actually, right now I'm doing one. I'm wrapping gifts.
Oh, okay.
Are you a good wrapper, Al?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
With paper, at least.
Do you use paper? Do you use bows, ribbons? What do you do?
Everything. Well, whatever's left from last year and a couple of...
Now, so basically, do you wait for the day after Christmas to buy your wrapping paper for next year?
No. I just kind of scrounge around and go through my in-laws' leftovers, stuff like that.
I understand. You're like a guy.
I have like a 10-foot pile.
You're like a guy.
No. A guy would buy his, like...
Like a guy.
His girlfriend or wife, he would buy, like, you know, like, Hanes women's underwear.
He would put it in a white box,
and he would wrap it in the funny pages.
Nah, that's too complicated.
Okay.
It's complicated, Joe. That's very complicated. But, you know, I used to be famous. You know what I used to be famous for?
Okay. Aluminum foil?
No.
I used to be famous
for shopping Christmas Eve. I had like a group of friends. We would all do it like every Christmas Eve.
Yeah.
We'd try and do all our shopping.
Well,
yeah, the only dilemma I have right now is that I have a lot of stuff in front of me, and I'm realizing that I went way over budget.
Oh.
But it's for kids. Mostly it's for my kids, nephews, nieces.
You're not one of those guys who, like, you know, likes to play with the toys first before you, well, I got to make sure these work. And
No, they
well,
got
maybe
this,
I don't
you know,
need to give this to this child. You know, maybe I need this toy.
Yeah. So. Well, that's part of it, too. I think subconsciously I'm buying it for myself. So.
Hey, you know, FAO Schwartz is going out of business.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the sales are not
oh,
so
wow.
deep.
No, they went to the, they went up to 30 to 35% off today.
When they're at 50, then I'll go.
But they I can't believe the way people have been walking out of there like they were giving something away.
I know. It's the perceived concept of a sale. It's
the perceived like, concept of a sale.
The perceived concept of a value.
There were no
and that
more
sale,
Star Wars action figures.
Uh-huh.
Really?
There are no more Lord of the Rings stuff to be had.
Was
this
from a shop or a friend of yours, or did you read this?
No, because it's right over by where my office is during the day, and I
so
took a walk through.
There,
I took a walk through.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
On lunch, you know.
Guilty.
I just took a walk through.
Guilty.
Now, there's one new thing about this Christmas. This is the first
you
time
you went looking for Star Wars toys for yourself, didn't you?
No.
Which I had my the list was emailed to me by my nephew and niece. Something
a
new.
List, what they wanted.
A list, right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And
it's
a real long
we
one.
We want the $75 item and this $105 item. And
actually, there was an item there for about $70. It's a one of those remote control trucks.
Mm. I got this bed for you. You got a niche you're looking for something original for? I got this $40,000 bed.
Is it $40,000?
$40,000.
Get the heck out of here.
Plus you got to have that. You have to have three workers come and spend 3 days with you and live in your house. Yeah.
Stop. It's to build this in your house.
Yes, it's got to be built in. It's so big.
Mm. That's a pure capitalist toy.
There are only like two in the world right now. One is like the princess of Imelda Marcus's daughter and... Mike is, like, totally, like, consumed by this. He's like...
Oh, my God. I'm just reading the stupidity. Okay.
I told all right. It was stupidity.
Fantasy Coach Bed. Wait. Let me get the music for this
shoes
stupidity.
Also, or what?
What?
Does she collect shoes, the daughter? Mm-hmm. The Marcos.
Probably. They have
never
to build
her
shoe clothes.
You know what? They probably built this, and then they said, you know, for one of these clients, they built it, and then they said, you know what? Stick it in the catalog.
We'll
bake it again for another 40.
Yeah, but you got to see even some of the other kids' beds in there, like $600 for sheets.
This is unreal. All right, listen to what it says here.
Yeah, right.
What?
Nah, that's weird.
It is.
Mike is going to give you the whole lowdown on it. Here it is.
The whole thing. Here it is. Wave your magic wand and wish for your fairy godmother. This is the most extraordinary, most, in brackets, over-the-top... children's bed ever imagined. Handcrafted in England of fiberglass and wood, the inside measures just over 6 feet in diameter and accommodates a 5-foot-long rectangular mattress. Craftsmen are flown from England to assemble, custom paint, and upholster this fantasy bed on site in your home. A 3-day process. Only 3 of these beds currently exist in the world. Allow 6 months. God darn. $39,500. Include shipping and installation.
Includes the 3 schmucks to put it together.
Damn. I hear you.
You got to feed them, though.
You put this in your castle. Okay? You put this in
your castle. That's
thing.
I bet you Michael Jack. Hey, you want to come
Michael
in and you want to come in
one.
And stay in
you
my
know
fantasy
he's got
bed?
One. You know he's got one. Stop.
All right, guys.
All right.
Yeah, have a good one.
I'm sorry.
Wait,
we
sir,
were just
sir, got
carried away. I'm
sorry. Sir, we got carried away. I'm sorry. He handed me this thing.
Mike was consumed by that enigma. All right. Have a happy holiday, sir.
You too.
Merry Christmas.
Bye.
All right, Joe.
Yes.
Look what you did.
But it's consuming. It's very consuming.
You obviously had some other things to show me. In there.
Well, this is the elite Christmas shopping guide.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hello.
Yes.
I would like to send out holiday greetings to the following people.
Mm. In alphabetical order or in order of greetings of importance?
Quick question.
Yes.
Did you know who that score was that I was playing a minute ago? Did you
recognize
the score?
No, I thought that was Oscar Peterson.
No.
No, I didn't know the score. Hello?
We're still here.
Oh, okay. I heard me. Okay. The greetings are to Sarah Fishko, Steve Post, Larry Josephson, Jenny Josephson, Kathy O'Connell, Sharon Matlin, Leonard Lopez, James Ursay, Marty Goldenson, Suki, and Padme. Happy holidays.
Well, that was. Isn't that called a shout out?
That is a Christmas shout out.
Oh, okay.
Ho ho ho. Okay. Call in now for your Christmas shout out on night shift.
Joe.
Ho ho ho. Yes.
Don't say things like that.
Now, if I was standing on 27th Street and 11th Avenue and going ho ho ho, you know, it'd have a total other different implication. That's what she said.
I wanted to know, did you hear about the elves that got laid off at Santa Park?
No, like a theme park?
Yeah, yes. It says this is in Helsinki, Finland.
Oh, okay.
Santa's workshop may not be a joyous place as it was in the past for tens of thousands of tourists expect to visit northern Finland this winter. Facing a blizzard of debt, St. Nick laid off many of the elves who work at the Santa Park attraction near the Arctic Circle.
Hmm.
says here, I feel really dejected because being an elf is part of my identity, said Milja Vimilia, who was told her job as an elf helping Santa no longer existed. Now who's here with us? Hello.
Good morning. You're on the air. Good night.
What was the phone number?
212-209-2900.
And what was this article you were talking about?
Oh, there's a couple of different interesting ones here, but does race exist?
Okay. Where's this article?
This article is in the Scientific American issue, December 2003.
Okay.
And basically what they're postulating is that if races are defined as genetically discrete groups, no. But researchers can use some genetic information to group individuals into classes with medical relevance.
What makes you relevant medically?
Well, looking around in the streets of any major city, you'll see a sampling of the outward variety of humanity. Skin tones ranging from...
Outward, what was it? Read that last phrase.
Outward variety of humanity.
Outward
variety of humanity.
Okay, got it.
Skin tones ranging from milk white to dark brown.
Blah, blah, blah.
Hair textures, blah, blah, blah. People often use physical characteristics such as these, along with area of geographic origin and shared culture, to group themselves and others into races. But how valid is the concept of race from a biological standpoint? It's a good point.
Come on.
Do physical features really say any information about a person's genetic makeup beyond indicating that the individual has genes for blue eyes or curly hair?
Blah, blah, blah.
Basically, overview of genetics of race. Cultural classifying humans. At a first step in identifying links between social definitions of race and genetic heritage, scientists need a way to divide groups reliably according to their ancestry. So what they're doing is they're going back and... You know that book that came out about the blood types? Did you ever read that book? There was a book that came out and said, you know, forget all these diets, forget everything else. Basically, there are certain blood types.
Yep. And you should have a diet
based on the blood type. Yep. To some degree works. I mean, I've seen people...
I know people are sworn by it. Go ahead.
Yes. So basically, that's what they're saying here, that basically... They're not looking at race anymore in terms of...
They being...
The scientific community.
Oh.
Yes, are now saying we have to look...
We no longer look at it as race, Dr. Yes. Mobutu.
Yes, they're looking at the genetic chromosomal differences in the human beings to turn around and determine where a person's genetical race.
Yeah, again, now let's get to determine what. What is the...
How, in other words, that's how they want to classify human beings.
I don't like the word relevance next to classification.
Well, there's, you know...
It bothers me.
It troubles you?
It troubles me.
Wow.
Did you like Last Samurai?
Yes, I did. I did, on my top 10 list of the year. But we'll talk about that at the beginning of next year.
Oh, you're not going to tell me your top 10?
No, because I didn't bring it with me.
You don't know it by heart.
Oh, you know what? The other thing I wanted to make a point of, being you brought this up. A month and a half ago, do you know who published their top 10 list before anybody else?
No.
Daily News. The Daily News had movies in there that we hadn't even gotten invites to early screenings
like
of.
Like Monster?
Like Cold Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
They were talking about just after...
Let me just say, the first of November,
they do a calendar, right, in the Daily News about what's coming out and stuff over November and everything.
Mm-hmm.
It was on November 1st that they published their top 10 movies of 2003.
Your point being?
How can you that early? Did somebody there?
Listen to me.
Yes, I'm listening.
You want me to demystify that for you?
Demystify it.
They got to see them because they would be making them top 10. That's why. That's why you got to see it.
I think this movie is going to be in my top 10 list. Can I come see it?
No. Let's just switch the wording around. Keep playing with that wording. You'll get it right. So, there it is.
Because the Golden Globes are already out there.
Joe, I want to remind you, the book, I Am So Down.
Oh, okay.
So down. Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Where were you reading that from? Where was that article about geological?
That's from Scientific American.
Scientific American? That's the name of the magazine?
Yes,
it is.
It's a great magazine.
Oh, and which article?
This is the latest issue. What?
December 2003.
And the name of the article?
It's the cover story, Science Has the Answer, Does Race Exist?
Oh.
Genetic results may surprise you.
All right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
That was very interesting.
Okay. I'll just put it out there for you to find out about.
There you go.
What's phone number here?
212-20.
What if I was, what's his name? Nick Nolte. It'd be like Nick Nolte in like 48 hours. Come on, you, I forgot what race.
Actually,
slur
Jeff Melman looks like the.
Oh, stop.
The poster
stop.
Of when they arrested
stop.
Nick Nolte.
Oh, stop.
Did you see that?
That wild-eyed look.
Yeah.
But he was dressed up for Hulk. He was doing Hulk.
The only
he
thing,
was
he was,
that,
only
he
thing
was
Melman
was
missing was
the
Hawaiian shirt. I actually got him one for
he
Christmas.
Was character for Hulk.
I was like, Jeff, put this on. I want to take your picture. So, he's the illegitimate bastard child of Nick Nolte.
Nick Nolte thought he was going to get an Oscar for Hulk.
Nolte for Hulk.
I think Nick Nolte is just surprised anytime somebody calls him for
a
job.
Come on.
So,
what's up with him?
It's all those crazy
Nick,
things he's doing.
What's up?
It's all those drugs.
Well, he doesn't do them anymore, so he's been clean for 10 years.
Yeah, but he does all. He's into this whole, like, extending youth craziness. So he's taking.
You mean the greasing the four-wheeler?
No, he's taking hormones and. He's pounding, you know, the hormones make you wacky.
That's because he destroyed his body.
I have no body.
He destroyed it with alcohol.
You know, I was thinking about this, too. You know, you ever watch Futurama and how in the future they have all the preserved heads?
Is it on TV?
Yes.
No, then I
didn't. You need to watch Futurama.
I don't have TV.
You, I have TiVo.
I don't have TiVo.
I am not TV. I am TiVo.
I have no TV.
I am TiVo. Mike Sargent and TiVo.
Joe.
It's like the courtship.
What is your
father.
Point, Joe?
Oh, God, I'm rambling again.
Yes, you are.
So,
what's your point?
I have no point.
You
I have no
point.
Life.
You're telling
I,
me something.
You know, no, leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Joe.
I need to find my nanotechnology. So. Life is happy. Life is fun. Call us, won't you? 212-209-2900. Let Dr. Mike show you a better way to a happier life. You can have happy life.
Joe, why don't you ask me that question again?
Mike, did you hear about the Chinaman in China?
The Chinaman in China. No, is that...
These people, there was a homeless guy who was laying on the street for 2 months. They thought he was asleep. He was dead.
Okay, well, you know, the beauty is a crowded place.
You know?
He's got a lot going on.
It wasn't until he started to offend in a rather large way that anybody brought it to the attention of the police. And you want to know something? It was freaked out because...
They were flies.
No, after I heard this story, I was on last Tuesday.
Oh, stop. Then
no,
you saw one?
No, I was on the corner of 34th Street and 7th Avenue. I was waiting across the street to go into Macy's. And there was an Asian-American gentleman standing there. He was holding a little plastic bag behind his back. All of a sudden, he drops the plastic bag. And he starts doing this thing like he's doing a funky dance, and poof, right out on the floor.
What do you mean poof?
He just, like, had a seizure or something. It was, like, right on the floor. And he's, like, out, eyes rolled up in the head, right? So I'm standing there, and like, all these people are looking, and I'm like, CPR or whatever? And they're all, like looking like, look, passed out man. And there's a guy directing traffic, and I'm like, excuse me.
And you have been listening to the first portion of a several-year-old holiday edition of Night Shift. Joe Masseri and Mike Sargent. Sadly, we do not have the conclusion of that program because You know, generally, Mike runs out of here and leaves the second half of his air checks in the CD players. And so that's all we have from that Christmas 03 program from the best of Night Shift. But we do have, oh, my goodness, I had no idea. Well, we have an interview with British comedy actor Bill Nye to bring us closer to the end of the 2 hours allotted to the Night Shift Best Of edition that we're presenting this morning. And let's see. What do you know Bill Nye from? I don't know when this interview is from. So I'm not sure what movie he's here to promote. He's a 74-year-old actor, at least at the moment, and appeared in such things as Shaun of the Dead. Maybe that's what he's promoting, State of Play. Also had a radio background. Slarty Bartfast in the film adaptation of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, and The Girl in the Cafe. Some of the titles that you may know him from. Also has a lengthy career in theater. Let's see, he was in Eye of the Needle, Curse of the Pink Panther, Little Drummer Girl, Hitler's SS, A Portrait of Evil, Being Human. State of Play, Love Actually, Underworld, Shaun of the Dead. Now, he does mention The Girl in the Cafe, which was a TV movie, Hitchhiker's Guide, Underworld, Evolution, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. So you've seen this fellow in motion pictures. Hot Fuzz, more Pirates of the Caribbean, Valkyrie. Even appeared as a voice in the recent Astro Boy motion picture. So let's hear Mike's interview with Bill Nye. And then we'll close it out with some Night Shift music. Mike and the gang should be back next week on the Monday overnight here at WBAI New York. Coming up at 2 o'clock, Keep Swinging Jazz with Greg Thomas. So stay tuned. And Mass Backwards will be along at 4 a.m.
Bill, I'm going to flat out tell you that you're one of my favorite actors. I'm just going to tell you, and I have to tell you, I could easily, off the top of my head, name a half a dozen friends and family who feel you're one of their favorite actors, too. So, just want to tell you. That's right. I'm not there, or I'd be gushing. Okay. All right, well, now for my first question to you is, and I wonder, I mean, one of the things that I love about your performances is that, to me, you just give so much, and you seem to thoroughly enjoy what you're doing. You love acting. When did you first know that this is what you wanted to do?
Well, I became an actor, like a lot of actors, kind of by, not by mistake, but I met a girl, the first girl who ever paid any serious attention to me, so... disproportionately grateful, and when she suggested that I could be an actor, I just nodded my head up and down. She could have said astronaut. I was crazy about it. But I really did it for, kind of to please her and because I had no other ideas. And it wasn't for a few years. When I finally got in the theater playing leading role, and I got given a couple of roles, particularly a role in a play by David Hare called A Map of the World at the National Theater of Britain, where I started to get seriously interested in the actual sort of business of acting. And I realized that maybe I had some ideas in that.
Well, let me ask you...
And then I got endlessly kind of fascinated.
Well, what was it now? What was that spark? What was it that fascinated you? What is it that feeds your soul about acting?
Well, one of the things in that particular case was the fact that I was fortunate to find a writer who said, you know, when you see great writing, it's like when you see great anything, it's great writing is where it was exactly what you had in mind and you were maybe just getting around to saying it, but you were never going to say it as elegantly as he did or as brilliantly as he did. So you got to say out loud in front of lots of people all the things that you actually felt currently.
which is a very kind of rare thing, and that sort of galvanizes you. But also just the technical thing of how to best express and keep people's attention, how to use your body and your voice to the maximum effect, and particularly what really got my attention is if there's any jokes to deliver. If there's any jokes, there is nothing quite like telling a joke on stage and having and sort of arranging for several hundred people to laugh at the same time. It's almost immediately addictive. It's better than nearly anything I can think of. So I got very, very fascinated by that and how you can get the laughs bigger and quicker and better.
Well, I'm curious now, for you, because you have such an extensive background in theater, and then, you know, again, one of the reasons I love you is because you pretty much could do anything. You could have played a guinea pig, I'm sure.
But tell
me what for you, especially coming from the theater, what I can definitely understand what you can get out of the live theater experience. What do you get out of doing film acting, and how did one maybe not prepare you for the other, or maybe how, you know, the different muscles you have to use?
I think it all feeds into it, one into the other. I think that theater acting very beneficially informs your subsequent film performances. I do a play, there's no average, but it's something, it works out something like every three or four years. And whenever I've just done a play, I feel that, as you put it, my muscles are refreshed, you know, and I'm kind of, as they say in soccer, I'm match fit. And, it, the technical considerations, like you bring it down, obviously, for the camera, and there's a degree of what they call naturalism, a greater degree than you would perhaps have on stage, although I attempt it on stage as well, only in a different kind of more telegraphed way. I think it all feeds into one another. The job remains pretty much the same whether you're on stage. You know, you just have to say things as if they've just occurred to you and you've never said them before, and you have to give the appearance of it all happening in real time and without, you know, prior consent. It's something which is, it's like selling a lie, I suppose, to good purpose, but it's a very, very fascinating process. Enjoy it on film. In much the same way as I do in the theatre, it's just how authentically you can give the appearance of what, you know, what isn't realism, obviously, but what, you know, to make it like real. And there are levels of what they call naturalism. So you get into, you know, and there are kind of tricks you find over the years where you can give the appearance of somebody who isn't acting, which is where the money lies.
Well, I think, actually, the way you just phrased it there is probably the perfect description of acting, to tell a lie to good purpose.
Yeah, that's kind of what you're engaged in.
Well, now, I'm curious also for you, because you've done such diversity, you've been, you know, definitely hateable as a villain, definitely scary as, you know, the head vampire.
Yeah.
But I love you in comedy. I love the you know, I love what you do. I love your timing and everything. For you, what do you find one easier or harder or more enjoyable than the other, doing drama versus comedy?
Comedy is marvelous if you have, you know, wonderful material. I'm lucky that I've worked mostly with great writers. I think probably, what do they say? Death is hard, but comedy's harder, something like that.
Yeah.
I think comedy, you've got something to kind of, you've got a vehicle with comedy if the writing is good and if the jokes are successful. You've got something to, you've got a springboard. They're all kind of hard. I find it all, you know, averagely difficult. But I think those larger performances are probably easier than the smaller, closer work where you're just doing, which I don't get to, I have had an opportunity to do that. But things like, I did a movie called The Girl in the Cafe, which also, what I really like, my favorite thing, I suppose, is kind of what I sometimes think of as undercover comedy, kind of integrated light entertainment, where you don't appear to be making any concessions to the fact.
Yes.
And Adam Sandler's performance in that. I'd never seen Adam Sandler until I saw him in Punch-Drunk Love. And it's a beautifully integrated comic performance. Very deadpan. Very authentic. And terribly upsetting at points. It's a very moving performance. And I like that sort of, if that can be called a genre, I like that sort of genre. And Girl in the Cafe, that was kind of my inspiration for Girl in the Cafe.
Hmm.
Try and present something properly real, and yet make you laugh at the appropriate moments.
Well, I think you've always been very effective at it. Now, I'm also curious, when you play, you know, again, looking at the diversity of roles, and I know as an actor, of course, you know, actors always want to work, but hopefully you've reached that point in your career where, you know, it's more about picking and choosing, and I'm curious how you deal with... I'm assuming that sometimes, like, when you do great at a role, all of a sudden you get offered a lot of roles just like the one you just did, or just like something. So how do you balance that and keep playing different kinds of characters?
Well, I'm lucky that I get offered a wide range. Many actors don't get that opportunity. They're successful in one particular kind of role, and they're generally invited to play only that kind of role. I'm lucky that I get to play... wide range. I really follow my nose simply in terms of the writing, the scripts, and if they are off, I don't mind what genre they're in. I don't mind what style or tone is required, as long as they are within their genre, the right, you know, successful. Like, you know, this G-Force, the script came, it's perfect. Everything about it, it's funny where it's supposed to be funny. It's, you know, it's perfect for the audience. Exciting here, you know, it's all built perfectly and it all resolves very nicely in the end. And therefore, you know, and there aren't too many of those in any genre. So I just try and go where the good writing is. And I do like to mix it up. But then, you know, like lately, and then you play, you know, a vampire, a zombie, and a squid. And then you get a hankering to, you know, put on some regular pants and play a human being. You know, just because, you know, I haven't done, you know, you haven't done one lately. So at the moment, I'm on a trying to play human being.
Contemporary human being.
But I've reached that difficult age where I can only portray men from other dimensions. But I'm hoping to break out of that.
I understand. Now, I'm also curious, but your character, Leonard Saber, part of it is, and I don't want to give away the movie, is, and I kind of feel they trade on your stock as, you know, to a number of American audiences, they know you can easily be the bad guy.
Yeah.
So I think they trade on that a little bit in this film, where we're not quite sure if you're bad or good, or if you know completely, or if you're completely nefarious.
Yeah.
Was that part of how you played it?
Yeah. You've got a kind of secret, so you've got to schedule the information so that you don't want to let on too soon about everything. So it's kind of which is part of the appeal of the part. So yeah, and I guess I suppose I should think more about that actually. The idea that, you know, what you've done, what the performances in other things before what you're doing, inform the way the audience might receive it. That's quite. I mean, I think that's a very good. It's a very good idea. I tend to just take them in isolation, but I guess it's quite a good thing, cause it's the story of your relationship with the audience. They, as you say, they're accustomed to seeing me doing bad things.
Well, yeah, I'd say so. You know, you've tried to capture some good guys that we know about.
That's true.
But and I'm also curious how you look back, or do you even think as you go ahead about your body of work, or what is that part of what you do, or do you just want to act and do the best work you can consistently and ongoingly?
Well, I do. I do want to continue to act and do the best I can. I don't often look back over my shoulder. Sometimes when you get days when you have more difficulty than usual persuading yourself that you're an actor, I'll go over things. I'll look for precedents in my career for things that I'm proud of. You know, I was thinking, and they wouldn't maybe be the things that people would mostly know me for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them happened, obviously, but a lot of them happened in the theatre and on kind of, I just use them. Times when I figure even I, who am above averagely, I think, self-critical, even I think, well, you know, take it or leave it. That was pretty much as best I could do at the time. And I feel, you know, I feel reasonably satisfied with what I've done. So I use them to embolden myself. But I don't spend a lot of time. I don't, for instance, I never watch myself. That's my version of
myself. That was going to be my next question. Do you...
No, I don't. I have zero enthusiasm for the idea of watching anything. I sometimes do, out of courtesy for the filmmakers, because people don't. I mean, I don't know. I know other actors who are like, but a lot of actors aren't like that. You know, they like to. It's part of their, either their process or it's part of their whole experience, work experience, that they, when the, you know, they look at the finished product. I prefer not to. I was there. I did. I know what I did. And if I watch it, all I'm going to see is how far short it falls from what I had in
mind.
And when I was younger, even when I was easier on the eye. I mean, you know, as you get older and your face gets more complicated to look at, you know, that's always a sobering thing. But when even when I was younger, I watched a couple of early performances and thought, I retire. I'm going to do something else for a living. I was absolutely appalled by myself. I couldn't stand the sight of myself, and I couldn't stand the sound of it. So I just gave it up. But occasionally I do look, and if somebody says, and sometimes, and if it's funny, then I don't mind so much, because if people laugh,
right,
it's indisputable. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
sure.
It's funny or it isn't funny. If it's funny, you know, because they laughed.
Right.
So I, you know, you kind of know that that's a successful thing. So sometimes I don't.
Well, you know, I used to interview one of my favorite film composers is Jerry Goldsmith.
And oh, yeah.
He used to talk about, you know, having a steady diet. I talked about the diversity of films and whatnot and playing live in front of an audience. And he said playing live in front of an audience, he said it was a lot like, you know, Chinese food. He says it's great at the time, but then by the next day you're like, okay, now what do I do? So I'm curious, in terms of the steady diet of material that you devour as an artist, do you try and make sure you do a play or two in there every...
Yeah, I would like to. I don't really have a plan. But the thing is, the way things have worked out is that I've been spoiled in the theater, and I have... I've done almost exclusively done premieres of plays, brand new plays, and I've done contemporary plays. I retired quietly from Shakespeare. Nobody seemed to take much time. I gave up Shakespeare some time ago. I have no enthusiasm for the idea of me performing Shakespeare. I'm perfectly happy if anybody else wants to do it, but mm-hmm. I have no interest in it. I understand he's the greatest poet the world has ever known, but the performing of it has no appeal for me whatsoever. Mm. I did a couple when I was young because I kind of had to, and I didn't like it, and I never want to do it again. I don't want to do any other kind of what they call classical work either. So that narrows the field a bit. Mm. And there are very, like everything, like films, like poetry, like songs, like paintings, like plays, there are very few that are, you know, marvelous. And doing plays, I find, constitutes real trauma, not like nearly traumatic or, in a manner of speaking, traumatic or metaphorically. I mean, like, for real.
Mm.
And I did a play a couple of years ago on Broadway, in fact, with Julianne Moore, directed by Sam Mendes, another David Hare play called The Vertical Hour, and
I remember.
Which was one of the greatest things that ever happened to me. But opening it, oh my God. I mean, you know, you come out the other side.
Mm.
And Andrew Scott, the young man who played my son, said, it's real trauma, isn't it? It's real trauma. So if it's going to be that tough, then the material and the people involved and everything has to be, you know, completely and utterly desirable. Everything has to be perfect. So those conditions don't happen very often. But, yeah, the idea of a version of my life where I don't do plays is unacceptable to me.
Mm.
So I know I'm going to have to put... Every time I open a play, every time on opening night, I stand behind the set backstage and I make a vow. And the vow is always the same, and I do it every time. And the vow is, I will never, ever allow this to happen. Why am I here?
is that
why aren't I on a film set with somebody asking me if I want a cappuccino? I could be making money. I could be sitting under an umbrella somewhere in the sun, you know, waiting to shoot a 2-minute scene.
Right.
You know, why am I going to put myself through 2.5 hours in front of people where anything can happen, where I have to achieve about 2,000 things, and then they'll have these gentlemen from the press come and write them, you know, my exam report and publish it in the national newspaper the next day.
Mm.
It's like, who needs it? But, of course, it's beautiful. And I love the theater, and I grew up in the theater. And, you know, and as I say, after opening night, for instance, in New York, or rather on opening night in New York, it was one of the most beautiful things that's ever happened. They went completely mental. We had the most, you know, it was like it's the nearest I get to kind of ecstasy. It was just perfectly marvelous. Pulled this thing off that people liked it. It's a magnificent thing. And also to be in New York, for an Englishman, to have that experience of 5 months in New York, feel as if you're almost part of the community and you sort of enter the language for a little while. It's very, very satisfying.
Now, I'm also curious, because I know this for myself, I'm actually a filmmaker as well, and kind of undercover as the film critic here.
Right.
But, was there a moment in your career, you know, because I know there was for me, where you said to yourself, you know what, I can act, and it's something maybe you go after again.
Yeah, there was a time actually. I try not to be superstitious. So I'm kind of very wary of saying anything positive about myself. I don't have a god. Or of any kind whatsoever, but I always imagine that in a minute, effectively I do, because I always think if I say anything kind of positive about myself, I'll be instantly punished. Your finger coming out of the sky, lick the top of my head off. But there was a moment, yeah. There was a moment, I think, I played Tregaron at the National Theatre in London with Judi Dench playing Arkadina.
Mm.
In the Seagull by Chekhov, and I came off after the first night, and for some reason I had a kind of revelation, and the revelation was that whatever anybody wanted to make of what we'd just done, it was absolutely fine by me. I mean, what we had done was a good thing, and what my part in it had been successful, and whatever anybody else wanted to say about it or make of it, that was going to have to remain their business. Because I'd already made a decision myself, and the decision was that it was good.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Which
yeah,
for me
sure.
was radical. And it was something to do with the play and the fact that I was working with racist actresses. You know,
sure.
Which helps because it raises your game slightly, to put it mildly. But I don't know. It was a combination of things, perhaps. But it was a moment where you thought, because I never used to, when I was young, I never used to tell people, if I met strangers, I used to hitchhike everywhere.
Huh.
And if I got in a car, somebody would say, where are you going? I'd say, well, I'm going to Birmingham, Newcastle, Liverpool. They'd say, what are you going to do there? I'd never say, I'm going to work in the theater.
Huh.
Because then they'd say, what do you do? And I'd have to say, I'm an actor.
Right.
I never felt authentic saying that. It took me many years to think of it. I thought, you know, like a lot of people, I thought in a minute someone's going to tap me on the shoulder and say, excuse me, how did you get in here?
Yeah, exactly. Get back to the real life now.
Exactly.
Well, last two questions. Tell me a little bit, because you work with so many amazing actors and actresses, and you kind of touched upon it because you said it raises your game. Tell me a little bit about, you know, maybe working on this film and you know, the people that you work with, and just the experience of working with just a great actor who allows you to, you know, go even further in your transformation, or the, what is it you called it, the selling of the lie for good purpose.
Well, you know, it's there are lots and lots of good actors, and I've been blessed. I mentioned Judi Dench. Judi Dench is the kind of person who, she does this very reckless thing. She doesn't come armed with a kind of a list of possible tricks to get her out of trouble.
Mm.
She comes with She comes defenseless onto the stage. She comes unarmed, as is the best way I can describe it, in a way, just, and she's ready for whatever's going to happen.
Mm.
I don't mean anything irresponsible like reneging on deals made in rehearsal, which I find absolutely
right.
Irritating, to put it mildly. But, but within what's been rehearsed, she'll follow you anywhere in terms of, you know, the whatever ideas pop up. And she will then take it a little further because she's doing something incredibly courageous, which is allowing herself, allowing everything to happen in real time as you stand there. She's not relying on rigidly trying to, you know, trying to repeat a good day in rehearsals. She's not got what a friend of mine used to call nostalgia for the first night.
Mm.
So she'll go with you. And, you know, I did a movie with her and with Kate Blanchett, and if you want to raise your game, try those two ladies, because they are spookily gifted. You know,
oh,
they are,
sure.
And the air kind of changes. It's a very mysterious thing. It's not rocket science, but it does remain mysterious, the whole what happens when two or three or however many people act to tell a story together. There are lots of apparently random elements which on a good day conspire to produce something satisfactory. And sometimes it's transporting.
Oh, well, it definitely works for the audience, I can say that. And I guess the other question I have for you is, now you've done, you know, you've done movies here, you've done movies across the ocean, you've done TV series, you've done theater.
I'm sorry, Mike.
Yes.
We are over on time.
Oh, we are.
Okay,
no problem. All right, well, my last question is, do you have a favorite, or do they all just give you different things and keep you well-fed?
They all give you different things. Some of them keep you better fed than others.
well, I meant artistically well-fed.
Keep a balance between the ones that are going to feed you and the ones that, you know, that may necessarily feed you literally, but they sustain you in other ways.
Okay. Well, I could easily talk to you like the rest of the morning, so I appreciate it. It's been really good, and I hope to, whatever you come, what's next?
What's next is Harry Potter. I'm going to play Rufus Scrimgeour in the, not this, obviously, the one that's just come out, but the next
Harry
two?
Potter. Oh, okay, great. All right, well, I hope you'll be here for the junket.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right, thanks a lot, Bill.
Thanks,
Mike. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Junkets, I love junkets.
Well, that's always good to hear first up. Thanks for that.
Okay. And I also have to say, it's interesting being American, and I'm a film critic, and I'm a lover of film and everything, and I'm aware of a lot of the films that you mentioned but in the film. But it's interesting because until you put it together chronologically, it really strikes me.
Frankly, I don't know what this next section is, and there isn't enough time to play it anyway. So what we're going to do, this is WBAI New York, by the way, and we're listening to bits and pieces of the best of Night Shift without Mike Sargent, who is under the weather this morning, but should return next week. So we're going to instead turn to the beginning of another Night Shift episode, which will take us up to 2 o'clock and keep swinging. We'll be along with your host, Greg Thomas. So let's enjoy the musical mix from another Night Shift here on WBAI New York.
I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
Thank you.
Chris. We have our first practice this afternoon. You are looking at the coach.
Call it off.
Take that stuff in the garage, okay?
There's going to be an accident. Call it off.
Call it off? What for? Chris has been looking forward to this all week, huh? He's really coming out of his shell, John.
Wait. I got to talk to you.
Have a little nourishment, and then we'll hit the
action. No, listen to me. Call it off. There's going to be an accident. Call it off.
Ridiculous. We always get on that pond until March. What the hell is the matter with you?
You want to kill your own son?
I'm scared, Dad.
For Christ's sake, John.
Don't be scared. Just go eat your cookies. Don't you know who I am? Don't you know who I am?
Of course I know who you are. You think I'd have you come into my son's life without checking you out? But I hired you for your abilities as a teacher, not as a fortune teller. Now, don't give me any arguments. The ice is gonna break!
Don't you know who I am?
Of course I know who you are. You think I'd have you come into my son's life without checking you out? But I hired you for your abilities as a teacher, not as a fortune teller. Now, don't give me any arguments. The ice is gonna break!
Tasteless, odorless crud.
Delightful smoke. Different somehow.
Enough to have a dream.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
Night shift. Night shift. Night shift. Night shift.
Enter the new decade and the new year inspired by the music of a movement that changed the world. On Thursday, January 7th at 11 a.m., Joy of Resistance.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.